It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Here we are again. Oh, we made it to our annual tradition known as the Drunken Rico. I am your humble host, Evan Roberts, broadcasting from the beaches of North Carolina, and I am drunk. I will say that my strategy this year was a little bit different than years past. I probably made the mistake of drinking too early. Okay, so I'm at the stage in my drunkenness in which I'm very tired, very reflective, and probably in a bad mood. I have to be honest with you, which I guess is fitting for this kind of Rico Bronya talking about the first half of the Mets season, which has been just a disgrace. I mean, everything about this season has been a disgrace. But I will let you know what I drank, and then we'll talk some Mets baseball here on our annual tradition known as the Drunken Rico. So I got very creative, and I guess this tells you the kind of drinker that I am. I love ICES, just a big fan of it. Not ICES, the terrorist group, but ICES, you know, like the fruity icicle beverage or icicle treat. I like strawberry. I like blueberry. And so what my wife did for me is she placed some alcohol inside the ICES, and then the ICES would melt, and then it would basically be like a treat slash a drink. So I partook in that for a significant amount of time. It was like a slow burn, like a slow gain to the drunkenness. And then I had some other drinks. I can't remember what it was. I think like a Blue Claw. Is that what it's called off? A Blue Claw? Is that does that sound familiar? Like a drink one would have. So Blue Claw. So have a little bit of that.
It's called a White Claw.
Oh, a White Claw.
Blue Claw. And I'm sorry, I had to get up because you're so dark, I had to like dim my lights.
So, for those who consume the Rico on the YouTube, it is very dark because I'm outside. Everybody's sleeping. I didn't want to wake everybody by, bitching about the Mets while drunk. So I decided I'll just wake the neighbors and I'll sit outside. So I'm actually in the same location as the Rico I did a day earlier, except it's pitch black outside. And I got to tell you, some of these bugs that have been crawling up my legs, first of all, kind of turns me on. Second of all, I'm just kidding. It doesn't turn me on, you pervert. But it feels weird. It definitely feels weird. Like some of these bugs are like the size of rats. Like they're that big. So they're kind of freaky. Yeah. So I am pretty dark. I'm doing a Rico in pitch black on a deck in North Carolina live at 11 o'clock at night. What does this say about me? Or really, Hoff, what does it say about you? What does it say about the audience?
Yeah, I have no idea. And I don't even know what's going on with my camera. My camera's like dying on me because it's so dark in here right now. Can I tell you something? I hear the crickets. I hear the bugs crawling on you.
They're very loud.
Yeah.
I also don't want to speak too loudly because even though I'm not in the house to wake my family up, I feel like there are people beachside. They're walking past. They're checking out the surf. And so I'm going to try to keep my levels at a very conversation sounding, whatever that is. I don't know what I just said.
Can I ask you a question? Could you do us a favor?
I'll do anything for you, Hoff. What would you like?
I appreciate that. Yeah. You got to tell us one ghost story.
Yeah. It does feel like I'm telling Cropsy stories. So there was this one time where Cropsy came up to the kids at the camp and said, say my name three times. Say, oh, Cropsy, oh, Cropsy, oh, Cropsy. And I will magically make a baseball season disappear long before it starts. Oh, Cropsy, oh, Cropsy. And then, boom, the baseball season's over by April. Wow.
Yeah, that's my ghost story. Anyhow.
What was Cropsy?
You never heard Cropsy? Like, you've never heard the Cropsy story?
No, I've heard of Candyman.
No. Cropsy was the very popular ghost story that would be told while I was at camp. Yeah, Cropsy was like the very famous. Well, you didn't get it, but a lot of people did. I can promise you that. Anyhow, what are we going to talk about on today's Drunken Rico? It's a great question. Usually the Drunk Rico goes wherever the Drunk Rico goes. Our theme will be kind of looking back at the first half. And, of course,
moving forward. I do want to make a couple of comments. I forgot what they were, but they were definitely interesting. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So the first ever Drunken Rico was in 2023. I did my research. So this is actually the fourth ever Drunken Rico. And in 2023, very similar to the year we're having this year, we did that Rico right after the trade deadline, right after the Mets had sold off Verlander. Scherzer was long gone. Obviously, David Robertson before that. And the Mets had gotten annihilated by the Royals and the Orioles, and the season was just completely spiraled. This is very different because, look, it's the All-Star break. This is not naturally when a season should be over. And it sucks. It sucks that we're in this spot. But I was going through the history of the Mets to see, like, is this normal to have a first half like this? And the truth is, it's not. Like, this is not a normal first half. Like, even in the bad seasons that we witnessed the Mets have. Like, for example, all right, I'll give you some examples in the history of our franchise that we for some reason have decided to root for. Like, if you look back at 2011 or 2012, we had a lot of, like, decent first halves. Like, first halves that would make you think, oh, this isn't going to be the worst season ever. This is odd because this is actually a first half that has completely put us out of our misery. And I was doing a chart the other day when I was sober. It was a sober portion of the Rico in which I wanted to see the last moments of being above 500. Because for this season, the last moment, do you know the last moment we were above 500, Pete, in 2026? If you had to guess.
It's definitely in April.
Good call.
Well, it could have been March.
Yeah, could have been.
I'm going to guess April 15th, 14th?
No, April 3rd. April effing 3rd. This team was 7-6, okay? Now, since then, we haven't seen 500. And I don't think any of us could have imagined that. Like, I don't think any of us thought, maybe at the end of the 12-game losing streak, we thought that. But even then, there was probably an optimism of a run coming. So I went back in the history of this franchise to see when and how often do we say goodbye to above 500 that early in a season? Like, how often does that happen? So in 2023, the year we were just referring to, the inaugural season of the Drunken Rico, we got to 30-29. We got to June 3rd. Okay, still, you know, early in the season, still long before the All-Star break, but 59 games into the year before we said goodbye to 500. I look back at 2021, September 7th, 70-69. 2020, I'm not going to count because the season started in late July. 2017, sort of comparable, 8-7. On April 19th was the last time we saw 500. But before that, like 2013, we got to late April, 10-9. 2012, we were in mid-July. 2011, we were in August. 2010, I don't even remember this. We got to September 16th being above 500. The only year that really compares to this is 1996. And then even 1995, we actually never saw 500, which is one of the rare seasons we could say that about. And when I got to 1996, I started thinking to myself, does that season have any familiarities with this season? And the answer is not really. 1995, I can draw some comps. I know 1992 is the big one. Like, that's the one we're all going to use because worst team money could buy part two. Here's the difference. And I'm sorry, if you're going to take this as optimism, I don't know what to tell you. It's not optimism. It's calling it like it is. It's seeing some things that we could at least twist into positives. When they sucked, when they blew chunks in 1992, everybody was old. Everybody was old. There was no youth to be excited about. I think the only youthful player on the 1992 Mets was Todd Hundley. And he wasn't very good, okay? He was young and it was nothing. This season, similar to 92 in terms of the payroll, in terms of the suckingness, the difference is we at least can look towards A.J. Ewing, to Carson Bench, to Christian Scott, to Nolan McClain. And so 1992 isn't the comp. That's what we had in 1995. Because in 1995, we had a young Edgardo Alfonso, right? We had a little bit of you. We had a young Jason Isringhausen, even though that didn't work out. But nevertheless, we had enthusiasm. He made his debut in 95. He was pitching well. Same thing with Bill Pulsifer. So I was racking my brain, especially now being, you know, effed up. Sometimes your best thoughts are when you're screwed up because you're not overthinking things. It actually is probably more similar to 1995 than any other season, because there are at least some things that we can grab onto and say, oh, okay, at least we have that. But let's not get this confused, because I don't want anybody to be confused by this. This is an all-time shit season. It just is. Like, there, you know, we could sit here and feel good about A.J. Ewing and feel good about Carson Benj and feel good about Nolan McLean. And by the way, all that's fair. All those young players are, it's totally fair to be excited about those guys. But they came into a season with an over-under of 90 wins. They came into a season only 2 years removed from the NLCS. They came into a season coming off a year like last year in which they collapsed down the stretch, but the hope was, oh, we won't collapse again. So I thought I had something smarter to say besides that. So this season sucks. Like, don't get me wrong. It is an all-time disappointment. But like 95, unlike 92, there are some tiny itsy-bitsy young things where you can say, oh, okay, at least I got that.
Well, first of all,
do you want to add something, or you're just going to stare at me awkwardly?
No, I like to stare at you awkwardly. I can't tell. It's so dark. It's so weird right now. It's a very intimate drunk Rico. The one thing is, I'll tell you this much. There's no collapse in sight, so that's a positive.
There's no collapse in sight.
There's no collapse. But here's the other thing, too. I remember you 2 years ago. 2 years ago.
Yes.
In 2024, telling me how bad of a season it was. And you were as a drunk Rico, and you told us that this team was not going to make the playoffs.
Yes.
So I'm concerned when you're talking about the little positives, because I feel like when you're drunk, you're not sane.
Well, hold on. In fairness. So in the 2024 drunken Rico, I think it was the midst of a road trip. Like, it was in the midst of a lot of games going on, and there was up and down moments to it. I think it was a makeup game mixed in there against St. Louis. I think I gave you the confessional of, hey, come on, we know this team ain't making the playoffs. Which I was wrong about, and I'm gladly wrong about that. If you ask me right now, and I got a few of these emails saying, hey, drunken Evan, give us your actual deep down emotions on the future of the New York Mets while drunk. Maybe that'll offer clarity on the future of this team. And the question was, do you have confidence? And the answer is no. What kind of moron would have confidence in this franchise moving forward? Like, everything is in all or nothing. Okay, I think that's kind of the part of the problem right now. We have as sports fans, it's all or nothing. It's all or nothing. Like, I give you a Nets example because I'm very excited about Mikael Brown and Igor Joman. We got a great future in Brooklyn. That doesn't mean I don't think Sean Marks did a terrible job. I can be excited about the youth while still simultaneously telling you, hey, this guy's been here for 8 years and they've gone backwards as a franchise, even if I hope now they're going forwards. You know what I mean? So when I say, hey, there's A.J. Ewing to be excited about, or there's Christian Scott to be excited about, that's true, but it also doesn't mean I have faith in this front office and this ownership to put together a championship team next year. Like, two things can be simultaneously opposed. Now, what I've gone on and on about with David Stearns is that, well, I don't have any faith in him. I'm not ready to fire him. And it's that other extreme that we have as fans. Like, I think he's done a horrible job. When have I disputed that? And even some of the younger players that have come up, it's easy to say, well, he didn't draft them, you know, or some of them. I mean, A.J. Ewing, he didn't. But saying someone should be fired and I want to change the entire trajectory of the franchise and who runs this organization doesn't have to be the exact opposite of also saying, hey, this guy looks good or that guy looks good. I'm starting to realize I'm making no sense tonight. My Rico drunken skills are like, I'm trying to make points. I don't know if it's making any sense.
I feel like we're as even as we've ever been. You and I may actually be on the same page. It's crazy.
You're funny. No, but to the answer to the question,
Do I have faith? No, I don't have faith. The problem is, as a sports fan, it doesn't matter if we have faith. We have to hope we're wrong, because this season has sucked on so many levels, and none of us want to ever sit through this again. And I just hope, and that's the only word I can use, I hope that we're not sitting through this a year from now. But what we have witnessed this season is an all-timer. Oh, and let me say this. As pissed as I was about letting Pete go and some of the decisions that were made during the offseason, and, you know, glancing at the All-Star game, because I watched it for about 30 seconds, then I got bored. It's a reminder that our biggest issue was not the decisions around Alonzo, Nimmo, McNeil, Bo Bichette. It wasn't. You know what our biggest issue is? Our biggest issue is, no, we can't develop anybody.
Oh.
That's why. Like, Jordan Walker's become a superstar. If you look at the way he had played the three previous years, he was freaking Brett Beatty. He was Mark Vientos. And we're sitting here with David Peterson on a different team, right? With Mark Vientos, most Met fans wanting a DFA, with Brett Beatty being a bench player at best. Like, and look at the Yankees. Just look at the other team in town. Cam Schlittler is the best pitcher in the American League, and Ben Rice is one of the great sluggers. Those are guys they developed. Like, our biggest issue, it's not as sexy, and there isn't necessarily one person to blame for it. But the reality is, we've developed nothing. Like, the reason we had success in 2024 is because there was development. Because Vientos was a superstar for a brief period of time. Because Peterson was pitching his ass off. That's the big difference. What?
I get it, but I mean, that still doesn't – that's part of the problem. But, like, here's the issue that I have is the way that they went about trying to fix the problem.
Yeah.
They could have done both. Like, let's develop and try to win. And it didn't feel like
that. No, they did try. They did try. It just failed. Like, David Peterson was in this rotation. Mark Vientos had a chance to be on this roster. Brett Beatty was going to be given every day at-bats. And they failed. By the way, you want to hear a drunken email? Drunken emails are fun, right?
Are you okay, Beck? Is anybody behind you? I feel you've been looking around.
I'm scared. I don't know what to tell you. Like, I'm afraid. I'm afraid of bugs. I'm afraid of animals. I'm afraid of strangers on the streets.
Did you take another gummy?
No, I just had a lot of the drinks I described earlier. I had the Blue Claw. I had White Claws. I had these strawberry
daiquiris.
Boy, the stars are beautiful, man. Like, there's so many of them. Like, I turn around. I can't get you a visual on YouTube, so you just have to trust me. Like, there's like thousands of them, and they're just glowing in the sky. It's I tell you, man, you just look around. It's nuts. It's freaking nuts, the world around us. Like, think about each star. Each star has got like its own solar system, and it's got planets. What?
Do you know what I just found out today?
What?
I just found out that we have like four types of aliens that we've discovered.
What?
There's like four different types of aliens that we've
discovered. That's a theory. Bring that up to Tiki Barber. He'll punch you in the face. We haven't actually discovered the aliens yet. I think there were theories on the different alien races that live. But by the way, did you see what I tweeted the other day about the crab? Did you see the crab I tweeted out?
Yeah.
That effing thing doesn't look like it's from Earth. It looked like something I created in art class and starts like moving around. And I put this video out, and I was not drunk at the time. I was completely sober. And I'm like, look at this freaking thing. Like, what the hell is this? This is from this planet? This box that's just walking sideways? Like, it looked like Rocky from, not Rocky Balboa, but what's that movie that came out recently? Project Hail Mary. I don't know if you guys saw it. Great movie. Very good movie. But there's an alien in the movie named Rocky. This freaking crab looks just like Rocky. It's unbelievable. Anyhow, let's get to the drunken email. This is from Nick. Nick writes, you know, the regimes have changed. The teams have been overhauled, but the results remain the same. What if the team name is responsible for LOL Mets? Could we possibly change our name? What about the New York Sotos? I feel embarrassed that our star must bear our name in uniform. Perhaps we can rebrand around him.
signed to Die Hard since 97. Well, first of all, great job, Nick, being a Die Hard since 1997. You've seen nothing but crap most of your life. Sorry about that. I thought about this in the past, not with the Mets, but I thought about it with the Nets back in the day when they were moving from New Jersey to Brooklyn. Like, should they just change their name? But you know why it's a terrible idea? Because this is who we are. This is who we are. We are Met fans. And yes, right now there's an LOL attachment to it, or as Joe Davis likes to say, oh, the Mets. And that's just something we have to live with. We can't run from it. I believe changing the name would be running from who we are. And we can't do that. You know what I'm saying? How about this one? Sean writes, I got a home run derby cheat code. Have Kodai Senga pitch. This is actually a very interesting thought. And I believe part of this email would be very offensive to people. Leo wrote, because it brings up 9/11 and things like that. So I'm just going to jump to like the non-part that would offend you. Basically, his point is that the loss at the end of this first half of the season that we did the Rico on, we did a Rico on the entire series, but obviously we focused on the finale of the series against Boston with Lindor, you know, screwing up the double play, and obviously the Mets losing to the Red Sox. Leo writes, I was young and don't remember the day in 1978 when Joe Pisarcik fumbled, Herm Edwards ran it back, and the Giants organization changed forever. But somehow I doubt anyone realized that day the depth of what had just happened. We thought the six-error game against the Cubs would be the memorable loss of this season for this team, one which would eventually get Carlos Mendoza fired, the exclamation point on this year's disaster. I wonder, though, perhaps the Cub game will be, in fact, the one which enters the annals of history, but I suspect that the defining moment of this year and the one which perhaps changes the trajectory of this organization in ways yet unknown is the game-ending Lindor 6-4-3 that wasn't. Does Steve Cohen call David Stearns into his office after the game and decide it's time to pull a 2004 Nomar Garciaparra? Or will this team perhaps move Lindor to second base next year? Or perhaps nothing dramatic, but that play in that game will become the defining moment of the 2026 season. Time will tell. It's a very interesting thought, Leo. So I'm going to answer this in two ways. For this season, I don't think the game will be that memorable because the cat was out of the barn, right? This season was buried long before that moment. I think it'll be remembered. I write down the worst losses of the season as they happen, best wins of the season as they happen, and that is a helpful guide when we do those off-season Ricos talking about the best wins and the worst losses. And I know that that loss will be up there. And one of the counterpoints I'm sure Hoff will have will be like, we knew we were dead by this point anyway. How much did it hurt? Which is, by the way, a very fair point. So I think in the relation of this season, it won't be the first game you think of. But where Leo is thinking outside the box is this whole Lindor stuff. I personally do not think the Mets will trade Francisco Lindor. And I have made very clear here on the Rico, and I'll do it again on a drunken Rico, maybe my drunker thoughts will be better, that I don't have an interest in really trading Francisco Lindor. But Leo's right. If they do trade Lindor and surprise us by dealing him before the trade deadline, I do think that this game will be a game you would look back on and say, wow, that was really the end of Lindor. There's a game I think of with Nomar. And obviously, I'm not a Red Sox fan, nor was I watching every Red Sox game. But I always think of the Derek Jeter game where he flew into the stands and was all bloodied. A game that the Yankees eventually won on a John Flaherty game-winning hit. I actually always think of Nomar sitting there, sitting the game out with like a headache. Whatever he had, it felt minor in nature. And it just made him look so bad because here's Jeter flying into the stands. So I think that game, for me, when I think of the Red Sox decision to trade Nomar for Orlando Cabrera, and it turned out to be a great trade, I think of that game. If the Mets end up trading Lindor, I think Leo's got a good point that this would be the game that you think of. With that said, I know I'm a little tipsy or effed up or whatever you want to phrase it as. I believe that Met fans are the drunk ones. Francisco Lindor's had a bad season. He's missed a lot of time, and when he's played, he's been crappy. Nobody's going to argue. His defense has sucked.
His offense has sucked. Bad year. I don't know what the second half's going to be, but in the first half, he's barely played, and when he's played, he's been terrible. I am not ready to take that period of time and say that's who he is. He's declining. Get rid of him. Now, if you're a believer in, well, him and Soto can't get along, his wife's getting rid of play. I'm not entertaining that crap. I think it's garbage. I think it's fan fiction that people like to write. So I'm not getting into the, I got to trade Lindor because his wife worked for Mamdani. I mean, that's freaking stupid. It's just dumb. You're a dumbass if that's your reasoning for wanting to trade Lindor. All right? You're letting politics infest your brain when it comes to baseball. I couldn't give a rat's ass about his wife working for Mamdani. Nor do I believe that the reasons they got rid of Nimmo and Alonso were related to Lindor. It was all baseball related. It was Nimmo's got a bloated contract, and they didn't want to give Pete 5 years, just like they didn't want to give him 5 years a year ago. That ain't new. So if you disagree with me, it's just me, one of those things we're just going to have to disagree with. And I called you a dumbass because, you know, I'm drunk, okay? I'm not going to call you dumbass on Monday, but I'm calling you dumbass right now, and you will live with it, okay? What was I saying? Oh, yeah. So I'm not looking at a short period of time and saying, oh, that's Lindor, get rid of him. I don't buy it. He had a good year last year for the most part. The year before that, he was an MVP candidate. He's got 5 years left on his deal. He's not 39, he's 32. Is it the greatest contract in the world? No, I'm not saying it is. But I don't see any way where dumping that contract makes you better. And, oh, but it can save them money. Save them money. Okay, for who? For who? What big-time free agent are you pining after now? It's ridiculous. I think the thought process is wrong. Now I'll be respectful. I'm going to get to I swing in emotions. I'll be respectful. Respectfully, you're a dumbass.
I agree. I look at Lindor as somebody who – listen, I think the slow starts are really starting to pick up and like really bother people. You add that on with the fact that he's missed 2 months because of injury. It's been terrible. But on the other hand, dude, like I am not ready to quit on Francisco Lindor. He's one of the best players in the baseball. At the end of the season, you talk about the back of the baseball card, he always ends up with 30 home runs, 30 doubles, close to 100 RBIs, 30 stolen bases. Like, what are we talking about? Offensively, he's very skilled, and defensively, he's one of the better defenders, even with this year being so shitty.
And you're going to turn it into basically Nimmo for Simeon 2.0. That's what you'd be doing. You'd be taking back a less bad contract. I'm not ready to do it. First of all, there's a billionaire owner who still owns this team. Okay, so he don't need to save money. We don't know if there's going to be a salary cap. I'm not jumping to that conclusion quite yet. And so I think I have a theory on not all Met fans, because I think some Met fans are just they're good natured and they're just like, he sucks. Like, get rid of him. It's a very simplistic approach. Joe's always thought that. We've had arguments about that over the years where this guy's bad, let's get rid of him. This guy's struggling, let's get rid of him. I think sometimes you got to look at the big picture on him. And I don't think the big picture on Lindor is that he's just declining. Now, has this been a very weird season for him? Absolutely. The mental lapses, the defense. Do I believe Tiki's theory that Cohen basically saying we're never going to name a captain has demasculated him? I don't know. I don't know what it's done. But I'm not ready to make a transaction that I think makes your chances of winning that much more difficult in the future. He's got 5 years left on his deal. Ironically, it's 5 years, 155 left on his contract, which is exactly what Pete got from Baltimore. So you do have that going for yourself. And I think the other thing is Met fans are bored. The season sucks. A lot of Met fans are checking out. They're not even watching these games anymore. Though our downloads continue to be solid here on the Rico. So I guess you people want to hear us talk about it. And I think that it's like, okay, what can we do to change this? What can we do to change it up? And I'm all for changes. Again, like present to me a Lindor trade that makes the Mets better. I'll do it. I'll trade freaking anybody. I want to win. I have loyalty to nobody at this point, especially since they got rid of the guys that we would have been more loyal to. I just don't see how it makes them better. And I think right now there's a lot of fans who are just believing that it would be an addition by subtraction. And that I can't get on that with Lindor. Addition by subtraction to get rid of a guy who a year ago you wanted to name captain?
who 2 years ago may have been the MVP of the National League. Like, that's crazy to me. And I don't think this discussion is going to go away on August 3rd. Like, if he's not traded by August 3rd, I think what will then happen is it'll be an off-season discussion. How about this email from Ralph? Ralph writes, I told you on April 17th that the dead bird on opening day was a bad sign. Season not over, but looks like an omen that was not paid enough attention to. You and some callers to the fan tried to contort and twist it into a positive, but we all knew deep inside that things would end up terribly. Do you remember the dead bird from opening day, Hoff?
Yeah, did it almost hit like Carson Bench or something like that?
Well, it collapsed on the ground, and the crowd chanted, pick it up, pick it up, pick it up. And Carson Bench picked up the carcass of the dead bird, and the crowd went nuts. And I don't know if we did that much of it on the Rico, but I do remember on Evan and Tiki saying, oh, maybe this is a positive omen, that the dead bird is a positive omen. But clearly it wasn't. And clearly this guy was right, that it was the opposite.
Yeah, unless you're into witchcraft, dead things usually don't go, you know, positive. Dead things don't equal positive stuff.
That's true. Moish has a very big criticism of me, and he wanted me to address it while on the Drunken Rico. Because, again, I don't know, maybe I'll answer it differently. Evan, why don't you hold the Mets accountable?
Wow.
Why is it that Francesa, on his podcast and radio show, has never been afraid to call out Mets ownership in the front office when he believes they're failing? If Steve Cohen or David Stearns deserves criticism, he'll say it. He doesn't seem worried about upsetting people or protecting relationships. You, on the other hand, almost always handle Steve Cohen and David Stearns with kid gloves. Why? You have one of the biggest platforms among Met fans. People listen to you. Most importantly, the organization listens to you. You're not just another caller or fan. You have an influence. Yet it feels like you're reluctant to use that influence to hold the people running the franchise accountable. You often sound patient and understanding until things have completely fallen apart. Only then, there's virtually no defending what's happening, do you finally become more critical. By then, it's already the end of the road. Well, a couple of things. First of all, Mike would find every way to defend the Wilpons. I'll tell you that back in the day. That's number one. And I love Mike. Number two, I'll start with Cohen because the Stearns thing is very different. I don't defend Steve Cohen. I appreciate Steve Cohen. And I think the reason I appreciate Steve Cohen is because of how effing bad the Wilpons were. Like, Cohen is not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. But I look at my owners and I say, I want you to do two things. I want you to do two very simple things, in my opinion, that make a good owner. I want you to spend a lot of money. I want three things. Let me rephrase that. Spend a lot of money, which Cohen does. So I don't think anyone could argue that. Number two, I want you to hire the right people, and I want you to leave them alone. Okay? Those are the three things I want from my ownership. And by the way, none of my owners really do all three. Like, Woody Johnson spends at times, doesn't hire the right people, doesn't leave people alone. Joe Tsai sort of spent money, but not really when he had the chance with the luxury tax. Apparently leaves Sean Marks completely alone. I think with Cohen, if you look at those three things, he spends, which I'm so, I guess, scarred by because of how bad the effing Wilpons were, that I give him like a 10 out of 10 when it comes to spending. Number two is hiring the right guy. I thought David Stearns was the right guy. I think we all did. He has not been the right guy. He's done a terrible job since he's gotten here. But three, and this is where it's a contradiction for a lot of fans, he leaves him alone. Because if he didn't leave him alone, he probably would have interfered on letting Alonso go and not making an offer. So with Cohen, Moish, I try to be honest. Like, again, everything isn't one or the other. Like, I appreciate that he spends. That is a big deal for us as Met fans after we dealt with what the Wilpons did. Number two, I thought he hired the right guy in David Stearns. I don't trust Steve Cohen to hire anyone else at this point, which is part of why I want to keep this clown around. Because I don't trust Steve Cohen to hire someone else after he's been through 18 different team presidents. And I do think he leaves Stearns alone, which may have been a negative this year with everything that happened during the offseason. So with Cohen, that's just my honest opinion. And that's been my honest opinion for a while now. So that's not waiting to change my opinion. Will there be a day where I want him to fire David Stearns? Because I'm like, all right, enough's enough. I know you can't hire anybody because I don't trust you, but screw it, get rid of this guy. Yeah, I'm not going to be there after three seasons. So that's not protected. I have no relationship with anybody with the Mets, nor do I want one, to be honest with you. I have zero interest. The only relationship I have is with my season ticket rep, and he'll tell me, hey, you got to pay the bill by a certain date. I don't know Steve Cohen. I think I've communicated with him about three or four times, but that's it. I have no interest in being friends with him. Same with David Stearns. Me and Hoff interacted with him back in February, back at spring training. That was my interaction with him. So it ain't about protecting any relationship. It's honestly about, that's my opinion on Cohen, right? My opinion on David Stearns, I hated the offseason. Like, I screamed and yelled and grew my beard out because I wanted Pete Alonso brought back. So while I appreciate you thinking I have a lot of influence, my beard didn't make any goddamn influence. Being in Stearns' office explaining why they should bring back Pete Alonso in the spring of 24, that also didn't have a goddamn influence. I wish it did. I wish I was as powerful, Moish, as you think I am, because I used my bully pulpit for those things, and it did zero. Zero. So I appreciate that one compliment you gave me, but it ain't that true. Now, do they listen? Maybe they do. I have no idea. But clearly, on the most important issue of the last couple of years, I had two things I screamed and yelled on a bully pulpit. Two effing things. Do you remember what those two were? I'll tell you what they were, because they screwed me on both. Alonso and DeGrom. And where are they? So, I'm sorry. I'll scream and yell and give my opinion all day. I screamed for both of those things. And both of those things, they not only didn't happen, they weren't even close to happening. They didn't make an offer to bring Pete back, and their offer to DeGrom was insulting. And oh, by the way, we're in year four of that five-year contract, and they could use him right now. But that's for a Rico down the road. Stearns has done a bad job. And that's not something I waited to say until July. We were talking about it in December, where we were too obsessed with what we were upset about. I think what naturally happens as a sports fan, and I do this with all my teams, it's not a belief. It's not a let's be optimistic. It's a, all right, I didn't like what you did, but I'm going to wrap my legs around it and hope you're right. I have to do that with the Jets. I didn't want Geno Smith on this team. I wasn't rooting for Geno Smith to be brought back. He was. I screamed about it. And when the Jets season starts, assuming Geno hasn't had 18 more speeding tickets before then, and he's the starting quarterback of the Jets, I'll hope he'll be great. So I appreciate your passionate email, but I disagree. And just remember this. You can disagree with me. You can say you're being too soft, or you're being too hard, or all you do is whine and bitch, or you're too optimistic, whatever it is. I don't care. Understand, it is truly coming from just a place of hope as a fan. So if I'm too optimistic or too negative, it is genuinely coming as a Met fan. It is not coming with any other agenda. I can always promise you that.
Can I interject here? Because I agree with you on the fact that, like, I like the fact that Steve Cohen is not interrupting. Like, he's just letting Stearns do what he wants to do. I actually commend Stearns for doing what he did, because I think a lot of the guys would not have been aggressive so quickly with one offseason. Like, the fact that he took a team that just missed out on the playoffs and basically said, oh, we got to change all this shit. You know, he did it in one offseason, made it his own team. But I think the one thing that I am looking at Steve Cohen for now is, you waited for David Stearns to become available. I think you need to now have the next guy in line. And if this contract's going to run out, if you're going to give him the full 5 years, that's fine. But have the next guy waiting in the wing for, like, I always say AJ Preller. I don't think he's going to be there. I don't know what's going to happen in 3 years from now.
Well, you guys and AJ Preller, what the hell is he wanting? You want to go over his moves? Want to go over some of the trades he's made?
Sure. I've got to go over them. I know them.
The Juan Soto trade.
Yeah, I know. He gave away C.J. Abrams and James Wood.
I mean, it could go down as one of the most lopsided trades in the history of the sport. And yet, it's like, what's that phrase? I'm certainly not going to get it when I'm drunk, but the grass is always greener. The grass is always greener. The grass is always greener. All of a sudden now,
the grass isn't always greener on the other side.
Yeah, or the grass is always greener. Right. I don't know.
It's more like
that you want to put over AJ Preller like he's freaking Connie Mack at his prime.
I mean, dude, he was dealing with a dead owner.
Branch Rickey, that would have been the better comp, not Connie Mack. He was an owner. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I mean, you're dealing with the AJ Preller was dealing with a dead owner. Am I right?
Stop.
That's truth. And he still found a way to do, find a way to, he found a way to be aggressive, make moves. My point is this is, you bring him here with somebody who's not afraid to pay a bill. Like, you're telling me right now that AJ Preller is making crazy trades. He's not signing everybody. He hasn't been able to. They've tried to. That would be different with Steve Cohen. You'd make a trade, but also be able to sign him.
A buddy of mine texted during this drunk Rico and said, he's a big Yankee fan. And he said, just for fun. Okay, we're having a good time, right? We're all having a good time. What would I want from the Yankees for Francisco Lindor? I don't have a good answer because, like I've said, I'm open to anything that makes the Mets better. So when I say I don't want to trade Lindor, it's not that I can't trade Lindor. It's that I don't think the return would ever be worth trading Lindor. Like, right. I would need something back that I'm probably not getting back. And that would be the same thing to the Yankee fan. Like, yeah, what would I do? It would be something that you'd laugh at. And that's okay. Like, I'm not saying that you should make the trade. It's why I don't want to trade Lindor, because the trade that would make me say, oh, okay, I'm good with trading Francisco Lindor would not be something that's realistically out there. So when my friend says, hey, come on, I'm a Yankee fan, give me something, I'm like, all right.
Ben Rice.
I guess we could go that far and just say Ben Rice.
Yeah, Ben Rice.
Cam Schlittler while we're at it. Yeah. If I was putting those guys off limits, would I take back the end of Rodon's contract? Because, hey, offset some of the money and the Mets need rotation help for next year. Like, sure. Like, I'll start right there. Yes, I will take back the contract of Carlos Rodon. That's a small piece, by the way, but that's something. I have no interest in Anthony Volpe, so don't even bring him up. I'd probably want George Lombard, and they're not going to trade him. That's one of their top prospects. That's their top prospect. So, yeah, I think that would probably be the framework of a trade where I'm getting your top prospect who could eventually fill in for Lindor immediately. I'm getting a pitcher to help fill out my rotation. But again, you see where this is going. It's not going anywhere. Like, it's not enough. Like, Spencer Jones doesn't do it for me. You know, it just doesn't. Jason Dominguez doesn't do it for me. So, it's one of those things where it doesn't work, right? Trading Lindor doesn't work for that reason. Either I'm being a pig, and if I am, fine. That's why I'm not going to trade him. That's why I'm not going to do it. Oh, yeah. Speaking of the Yankees, let's have some fun. You ready? Want to have some fun?
I love it.
Let's check in on our Yankee-Mets bets from the beginning of the season and see how we're doing. We did Anthony Volpe versus Brett Beatty in war, okay? Anthony Volpe, 0.9. Brett Beatty, 0.0. So there's an edge for Anthony Volpe and the New York Yankees. This is going to be fun. Luis Robert Jr. home runs versus Aaron Judge stolen bases. Ooh.
Wow, that's got to be tight.
Luis Robert Jr., 2 home runs. Aaron Judge, 5 stolen bases.
Oh, my God.
With Judge on the shelf and Robert Jr. on rehab, you got to feel decent about the Robert Jr. part of that bet, don't you, Hoff?
Well, I mean, he's only going to play once a week, so I don't know. Is he going to hit a home run like every 2 weeks?
This is one that we can feel very good about. Giancarlo Stanton home runs, 3, versus combined home runs by Brett Beatty and Carson Bench, which is 15, 11 for Bench, 4 for Beatty. So that's a comfortable one. We did a best of 5 between Nolan McClain and Cam Schlittler. That hasn't been good for us. Now, a lot of that is Cam Schlittler is the best pitcher in the American League. I don't care what John Schneider says. So that's just an L we got to take. Hasn't been a horrible year for McLain. I think he's pitched a lot better recently, but you know the deal. Saves, Devin Williams versus David Bednar, closer than you think. 18 for Bednar, 13 for Devin. Not bad. ABS percentage. The Yankees are kicking our asses all the way around. When it comes to the batters, the Mets are at 49%. The Yankees are at 51%. When it comes to the pitchers or catchers, the Mets are at 53%, and the Yankees are at 58%. So the Yankees have kicked our ass in both. And then the one area we're winning is we also did a best of five, Aaron Judge versus Juan Soto. And most of these are counting stats, so big edge for Soto. Soto's got more walks, more stolen bases, more home runs, more runs scored. And even the OPS, 967 for Soto, 907 for Judge. So those are our Met Yankee bets. That's got to be. And let's leave out the win-loss record because that one's a little.
Yeah.
No. It's a little off. Just a little bit off. Just a tiny bit.
We could throw those away after this year. We don't need to look at them ever again.
Nah, we could burn that one to the ground, just like this season is being burnt to the ground. But I have to admit, Met fans, I'm excited for the second half because it is baseball. And I want to remind everybody, even in a drunken state, you don't know how much baseball we're going to get next year. You don't. We do actually have some young players that are worth watching. Christian Scott starts. Now Zach Thornton starts, Nolan McLain starts. How about that? 60% of the starts that are made, we got a young guy making those starts. And who knows whatever young guys come up in the future? Probably not that many because Ryan Clifford's had a bad year, Jacob Reamer's had a bad year, all that kind of crap. But I am excited for Thursday. I'm excited for the second half to start. I don't have any false illusions that they're going to win a bunch of games. But there are young players worth watching that maybe can give us just a tiny bit of optimism as we move towards the end of the season. So that's something.
Do you want a top pick in the draft next year? Is that what the goal is, or do we want to win games?
Let me tell you something. As somebody that just dealt with the lottery, there's a lottery. Now, let the Mets win games. I'm not sitting here about losing games. They could move back all these slots because of their payroll. I get it. It would suck to move back slots in the draft. No one's disagreeing with that. But I'm not thinking that way. I don't think that way in baseball ever, and I'm certainly not going to think that way this year. Plus, there's enough people playing that are going to be here in the future. I think sometimes with bad teams like the 92 Mets or the 93 Mets, it's like, God damn, I'm watching Eddie Murray. It's like, what does that do for me? In most of the cases here with the guys that are playing, they're going to be here in the future. So, no, look, if you're going to root against the Mets, God bless you. You ain't going to get that on the Rico in the second half of the season.
Did you like the thought process of trading Brooks Raley or potentially trading Brooks Raley for the that pick?
The Pirate pick?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, it's – draft picks are theories, right? When you get a young prospect back, even if they're not ready to come to the major leagues, there's something exciting about that. Like, I've been a part of this a lot as a Met fan. There's been a lot of sell-offs. Like, I'll never forget the David Cone for Jeff Ken Ryan Thompson trade or the Bobby Bonilla for Alex Ochoa trade. Doesn't mean that stuff worked out. Obviously, Alex Ochoa, five-tool player, my ass. But there is something exciting about getting a human being back as opposed to a draft pick. That's just the reality. Anyhow, I hope you enjoyed our drunken Rico. I was in a very sad, quiet stage of my drunkenness. Like I mentioned earlier, I started drinking at a very early part of my day. And now I'm done drinking for the week. Like I got it all out of my system. I got to tell you, especially those Blue Claws and the strawberry mixed with the liquor. I think it was rum that my wife put into the ices. But man, it did its thing. It did its thing. So thank you very much. If you were drunk with us, I hope that you were very responsible because it's all, man, you got to be responsible. Like my wife was very nervous about me going outside with a pool nearby. She's like, you better be careful when you walk back inside. And I'm like, you got it, honey. You got it, honey. By the way, I can't say what I'm about to say. I was going to talk about some of the emotions I get when I'm drunk. I'm going to leave that. I'm going to leave that to myself and maybe to your imagination. Anyhow,
I'm just happy that you're still alive, that no one came out of the bushes. Or is there bushes behind you?
No, it's a beach. It's dunes. Oh.
I'm glad there's no, you know, sand walking sharks that are coming after you or anything like that, you know?
Yeah, you're scaring the crap out of me. I want to wrap up the Rico now the more you talk about this. We got more Ricos along the way. If you're new to the Rico Bronya, after every series, we always give you an instant reaction or a series recap, I should say. And then we mix in instant reactions throughout. You never know when we're going to get it. So subscribe to the Rico and subscribe to the WFAN YouTube page. Apparently, the Rico carries the WFAN YouTube page. So I guess you guys do good work for them because no one else does. Not even my regular show does as well as the Rico. So you're welcome, WFAN. Anyhow, thank you very much for listening to another edition of the Drunken Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.